From the Sky News Centre at 6, the French have told the UN Security Council the Syrian government's decision to again use chemical weapons means it's reached a point of no return. Speaking through a translator, the Russian ambassador to the UN, Vasily Nebenzia, has accused other nations of ganging up on his countries and its ally.
These countries have demonstrated the fact that they have no interest in an investigation. The sole thing that they have an interest in is to oust the Syrian government and, more broadly, to deter and contain the Russian Federation.
The UK has revealed Russia spied on Sergei Skripal and his daughter for at least 5 years before they were poisoned in Salisbury. The country's embassy here says it will produce its own report into the nerve agent attack. Sir Cliff Richard has left the High Court after breaking down while giving evidence against the BBC.
Okay then, guys, thank you very much.
He faced a barrage of photographers, having cried as he saw images of his home filmed live during a police raid in 2014. He told a judge he felt forever tainted following the coverage, which took place after a sex assault allegation which never led to an arrest. The BBC says its reporting of the search was accurate. 2,000 jobs have been saved at women's retailer Select after the company's landlords approved a rescue deal that's negotiated a reduction in rent. The video assistant referee system won't be used in the Premier League next season. Top flight clubs want to continue testing it. Liverpool boss Jurgen Klopp says it needs a bit more work.
I really would prefer that we have the right decisions, but it needs to be fixed before that. I think it's not perfect in the moment.
And the Duke of Edinburgh is recovering at Windsor Castle after being discharged from hospital following his hip replacement operation. The 96-year-old looked comfortable and relaxed after spending 9 days receiving treatment and physio following planned surgery. That's the latest. I'm Kevin Gover.
Changing the world one street at a time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's Friday, it's 6 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's Politics Show. I'm Tony Gosling. Helping us review this week's news is Labour Councillor for Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston, Donald Alexander, and Lib Dem leader, Councillor for Knowle, Gary Hopkins. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 7 o'clock news, the Polonium Files. Vladimir Putin, killer of Alexander Litvinenko, who just tried to kill former Russian spy Sergei Skripal in Salisbury, did he? And killer two of the brilliant Russian investigative journalist Anna Politkovskaya in the lift of the Moscow Tower block where she lived by a hitman with a baseball cap, all killed by the evil mastermind Putin. Or were they? We look at the background to Politkovskaya's 2006 murder, which happened at the same time as Litvinenko tonight, and a shocking investigation she was doing earlier that year into corrupt officials in the Russian Secret Service, the FSB, and the Chechen Secret Service, who were covering up horrific, apparently motiveless poisonings of scores of Chechen schoolchildren with what's now thought to be polonium. That was then, but today, 12 years later, Russia is threatening to sink NATO naval ships to shoot down British aircraft if we use them to attack anyone fighting ISIS or other Syrian terrorists. So this weekend, the United States, Britain and NATO stand on the brink of war with Russia, with Syria as the prize. The background's nearly 100 expulsions of Russian diplomats after the Skripal-Salisbury nerve agent poisoning over a month ago. Joining us to delve between the lines and sort the facts out from the spin behind the Skripal story and last weekend's alleged chemical weapons attack in Douma is Bath University's sociology professor David Miller. That's all in the second hour after six. On to our news review in a minute, but first Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 7 Celsius, mainly dry this weekend. Highs up to around 16. Sunnier tomorrow. Light rain and breezy, though, on Sunday. OK, ditch the shopping. Just go out and have a nice day tomorrow in the sunshine. Next week, highs of 21 Celsius. Warming up as the week progresses. Plenty of sunshine. A little breezy, though. Next weekend, that's the 21st and 22nd of April, highs of 18 Celsius with more sunny spells. Almost feels like spring's arrived. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So helping us review this week's news is Labour councillor for Avonmouth, Lawrence Weston, Donald Alexander. And also Lib Dem leader and councillor for Noel West, Gary Hopkins. Hi, Gary. Noel, is it?
It's part of Noel West, but yes, it's Noel.
OK, let's just start with you, Donald, because I think we're in a situation now where we're starting to bed in with Marvin as mayor, but a lot of people are starting to worry that actually the cuts are more severe than they were under George Ferguson. George was able to do a little bit of creative accounting. It doesn't seem that Marvin's really wants to or is able to do that.
Well, obviously, we're dealing with the financial situation that was left by the previous mayor. It's taken a year and a half now to get the finances under control, so we're actually clear how much money we have got to spend. And, yep, there have been cuts, but as we know, the cuts are the result of the financial situation that all local authorities are put in. Northamptonshire has gone broke, and the government commissioners have been sent in to look after it. We've got no intention of going that way.
Gary, what do you make of what Donald's saying there? Is there any wiggle room, do you think, that Marvin hasn't been exploiting?
Yes. Basically, things are tight, things are tough. Well, incidentally, something that Northamptonshire has also got in common with Bristol is that there's an investigation going into dodgy payouts to ex-chief executives. So, you know, that's something that's coming up in Bristol. But basically, we put down an amendment at the budget because the mayor has actually put in a huge, huge contingency fund for capital projects. Now, we know from our experience of running the council, if you put in a large contingency fund, then officers will work to it. And basically, it is some of the revenue spending power is being destroyed to provide this capital safeguard, which is not needed.
Can you just explain the difference between the two, capital and revenue?
Yeah. Well, basically, capital is one-off spending. So you are going to build a new road. Revenue is you're going to run buses on it, so you might have to provide some subsidy to run those buses. Basically, if you actually want to provide extra capital spending, you can borrow money and actually money that would have been available for revenue spending can be used to pay the interest on that money. And basically that's what this administration are doing more than they need to. Now, no getting away, things are tight and they're tight in all around the country. But we put an amendment down which all the opposition parties voted for and Labour members voted against, which would have provided more revenue for libraries, school building and for parks. I'm afraid Labour members voted against that.
Donald, did you vote against? Why did you do that? Were you under heavy manners?
No, not at all. No, I'm a deputy whip, so I would have known exactly about the manners. No, the amendment that was put forward was to spend money that we were going to get next year and we were going to get the year after. And we'll be happy to spend that when we get it, but it wasn't a very sensible amendment. The reserves that we've got are, yes, contingency, as Gary says, in case those capital projects haven't been properly planned, because that's the history of Bristol City Council. Gary will know from his time in power that there was a lot of slippage, a lot of problems with capital projects like the Metro bus, which he was part of managing at that point.
Jump in there and actually say that Metro bus, when it was handed across to the previous mayor, who made a terrible mess of it, no getting away from that, was on time and on budget. And previous to that, the Greater Bristol Bus Network, which was a similar sort of investment with the four authorities locally, that delivered on time and on budget.
But what about what Donald was saying there, Gary? You sort of managed to slip out of that one. What he's saying is what you were trying to do with your amendment is to spend next year's money this year.
No. What the administration were doing was taking revenue spending over the next few years and converting it into potential capital to cover for failures in delivery of capital projects. That is not a way forward. It's tight. Things are tight enough genuinely as they are without destroying available revenue spending for extra borrowing that you don't need.
It's always easy to snipe from the sidelines, Gary, and that's where you are now. You're not in power, you're on the sidelines.
Well,
but right, What about libraries? What about toilets? What would you be saying to keep those open? These are some of the basic facilities we pay our council tax for, and they're being closed down.
Absolutely. Well, the libraries is a classic example. Firstly, we put down an amendment, put down a motion to council to show how better use could be, better service could be provided, even within the budget that the mayor was putting forward. That was actually voted through. A few Labour members had the guts to vote with us and the opposition parties to show how we could get a better library service, even within the budget he's allowing. But they're slipping out of that. There was a mutual model that could actually produce a better service. The Cabinet are going to make a decision, and at the moment they've decided to completely ignore that report that's coming in from outside the council. So basically that's one idea.
You would outsource it then, Gary?
No, we would actually say that the way that you actually do things is actually have a mutual model. In exactly the same way that the Music Trust, the Colston Hall, was a constant drain on the council. There's a trust there, one of the most successful now in the whole country in terms of not only running the Colston Hall, but providing music education. And that has been, that's the trust model. It's not privatisation, it's a trust model.
Donald, that sounds like a sensible middle way of doing things. And also, as Gary's pointed out, it's worked elsewhere. Why can't it work here to keep our libraries open?
Yeah, the Colston Hall is very successful, but as I recall, it still requires some money from the council. I think our approach is really to involve communities as much as possible, rather than outsourcing to a company, which may be called a mutual, but may well be run by people from particularly well-off or particularly communities in the centre of the city. What about communities like Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston, where people haven't got the
capacity? Where you were happy to close all the libraries. I mean, we've got 27 libraries at the moment. The Labour plan is to cut that down to 10. What we're actually saying, without even changing the amount of money put in, and by the way, you voted down an amendment at the last budget council, which would have put some more money into libraries, but you voted that down. But even within the existing money envelope, if basically you use the staff that you've got more sensibly and get the work supplemented by volunteers in some areas. Now, absolutely true, in some areas it's more difficult to get qualified volunteers, but you've got to regard it as a fully integrated service right across the city. I mean, you cannot abandon huge areas without libraries.
Gary's got a point, surely, Donald, in that we see charity shops which are actually run, not actually run, but staffed by volunteers, people who just give up their time for nothing to run them. I mean, surely that's a model that is not, at least it means the libraries stay open. It's not perfect, but until we get, I would imagine what you want, which is a Labour government at Westminster, to start funding local authorities properly again, that at least means we don't lose the library in the meantime.
Yeah. Well, we haven't actually closed the library yet. Volunteers, we welcome volunteers in libraries, and we always have. The question is, how do you ensure that in areas where there isn't the capacity for volunteers, this just doesn't become a model that suits the areas where you've got a lot of elderly professional people who are semi-retired on large pensions, who can look after them, keep those libraries going, and areas like mine where you haven't, they just die.
So
there has to be a level of control over it.
You've got 17 libraries in your sights right now. When are they going to begin to close? I think actually maybe one or two have closed already, haven't they?
A decision is going to be made, I think, at the end of this year, or perhaps earlier.
Okay, so they're staying open for a little bit longer.
Yeah, they're staying. And nothing's been closed yet. I was up by my library yesterday.
In a way, Gary, aren't you a bit of a Luddite? Because things have moved on beyond the world of libraries and books. So people mostly get their information from the internet.
I'm sorry, but if you think that a library is just about people wandering in and borrowing your book, you're completely wrong. They're there to provide services for people who don't have internet access, for example. Do you know, if people are applying for jobs, they've got to have access to the internet and be able to prove what job searches they've actually done. And a lot of people don't have that. Libraries provide that sort of thing. They provide a wide-ranging education service as well as just borrowing books.
Yeah, part of the reason for taking this bottom-up approach and involving the community is so that communities can actually decide what they want to see in their library, because, yeah, there are some areas where internet access is really important. But there's other areas where certain community activities and clubs and stuff for children is really important.
Donald,
and it was for communities
that,
to
that's
decide
a cop-out,
that.
Surely, because people elect you to make those decisions. They elect you to make sure those services stay open.
Yeah, but we need to know what sort of services they want. The fact is different libraries work differently in different areas according to the demographic that's there, and we need to have that discussion. And actually this process has been a really useful way of having that discussion in my own ward as to what people do want for their libraries.
Okay, I may mention toilets as well, but this is another really crucial aspect of life in the city. The last thing you want is particularly elderly people going up to a toilet to use it, only to find it's been shut. Gary, this is a horrible thing for people to have to deal with. And also, you know, these places need to be... I mean, people who find people who find toilets closed in that way must wonder why they're paying their council tax.
Yes, absolutely. And also, for that matter, Bristol's a huge tourist city. If we don't have a solid network of accessible toilets, that's a disadvantage, and word soon gets around. Now, I mean, I accept in some cases that some of the public toilets can be replaced by access to, you know, local pubs, supermarkets, that sort of thing. But the work hasn't been done. And basically, they're closing the toilets without having put in place any alternatives, ways of people getting proper access. And, you know, I'm afraid it's incompetence as well as actually, you know, as well as the budgetary situation. It's incompetence of management.
Donald, how far down this toilet closing road are we? I mean, I would imagine also that there's some that you just have to keep open. Some, I imagine, that you will have where people have to pay to use it in the city centre, for example.
Well, as Gary will know, a lot of those toilets were either closed or unusable during his day. Certainly the one in Seamills was closed many years ago. They're now all closed except the ones on the Downs, which are managed by the Downs Committee. And we now have a community toilet scheme, which means that you can go to a map on the Bristol City Council website and you can find a map of shops, pubs, health centres and all kinds of public buildings where there are nice clean toilets which you can use.
So the Merchant Venturer owned and managed toilets are all still open, but the council ones are closed. I'm talking about the ones up in Clifton. In the posh areas, they're open.
I'm on the Downs Committee, and that's not a posh area. The Downs is for the benefit of the city as a whole.
But it is owned by the Merchant Venturers, isn't it?
Half of it's owned by the Merchant Venturers, half by the council. So that's why we manage it jointly.
But that's fascinating. The Downs Committee, so is it 50-50 merchants and councillors or what?
Yes, with the Lord Mayor as chair.
And what else have you been talking about up there? Because that's another area which is, I mean, it's a really important resource, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a law from, I think, 1861, which says that sets up the committee to manage it because it's owned by two different parties. And, yeah, we manage the football pitches up there. We have loads of activities. Thunderworld's up there at the moment. We'll have Tour of Britain coming around there soon. We have Team Love up there with Noel Gallagher and various other artists in the summer. So it's pretty much maxed out in terms of what we can have up there because the grass is quite thin, because it's also a site of special scientific interest.
Are you ever a bit envious of the merchants as a councillor? I mean, but you're basically, at the moment anyway, I don't know how long this will happen for, but you're a little bit like official receiver, slowly closing things down, whereas the merchants always seem to have plenty of cash to sort of slosh about in or with.
It's not just the merchants, is it? I mean, it's the universities, it's private companies, and, you know, as local authorities, we're the poor cousin of almost everybody these days, and you only have to ask why the Lib Dems did that to us when they were in bed with the Conservatives.
Well, bluntly, the country for 5 years gradually squeezed down on a lot of spending. Absolutely, we were part of that. But the reason for it, and it was started 2 years previously by Alistair Darling, because the economy was in a staggering mess. Now, we don't agree with what's going on at the moment, and we actually stood against the Conservatives on the policies that they're actually enacting at the moment. But for 2 or 3 years, in actual fact, squeeze on council spending produced zero problems. It's producing significant problems now, major problems now, not just on councils, but for the police. But you have to, at the end of the day, you can't go in for Corbynomics, which actually a pie-in-the-sky nonsense. But the alternative to Corbynomics is not Tory slash and burn.
I think it's time for old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers to come in.
Well, I think it's obviously, we've had you on this show many times and we're not going to agree about this. The fact is that the country lost its AAA credit rating when you were in coalition with the Conservatives, because George Osborne cut too far too fast and the economy started to slow. So in actual fact, they couldn't reduce the deficit in one parliamentary term as they promised to do and you promised to do when you took over. And in fact, cutting at that stage was wrong. We lost our AAA credit rating, which we haven't got back. It doesn't matter that much, because your AAA credit rating is just a shibboleth anyway, as anybody who understands anything about macroeconomics understands. But the idea that to solve the crisis we have to cut, it's just fundamentally wrong. And what Corbynomics is going to imply, of course, the real problem with Corbynomics is we're talking about what we might do with the situation as it is now. But of course, by the time we come to power, there's going to be another banking collapse.
Well, because maybe, possibly. You're always predicting this. Can you tell us what is Corbynomics?
Well, Corbynomics is being defined as we speak. It's people like Simon Wren-Lewis, Ann Pettifer. Most people will never have heard of these people.
Richard Murphy.
They're very.
Basic idea is called people's QE. Can you just take?
Well, no. It's not. There's various strands to it.
This is an important idea.
No, but the point is
quantitative easing. Quantitative easing is being used at the moment to prop up the property market and the stock exchanges. And what Richard Murphy and others have suggested is that the Labour Party, a Corbyn-led Labour Party, might start using that QE printed money to actually just spend, literally, to give to the city council here, to bring back the budget up to a sensible level and to actually start a spending spree, really, to capital projects, rather like happened in the 1930s, for example. Lots of things were built by the government to kickstart the economy again.
That's
it's certainly the case that local authorities and some other institutions need some more money now. There's no argument about that. But you do need, at the same time, to be raising some of the taxes, particularly on the better off, to actually pay for that. You can't do
We can agree about that. Yeah. Because we need a consensus on that. I mean, don't forget that the wealthy classes have had their assets protected by QE. They've actually done very well out of the crisis. And their property prices have risen and all the rest of it. And the stock market is actually at record highs all over the world. Can you believe it? The far right... Right, Austrian school economists agree with me that is going to crash. They're right, and I agree with them, because in actual fact the mess is fundamental. It's actually fundamental to the way capitalism has been organised since 1973. But we're going to go through a new phase now, and it's going to be a bit different. People are suddenly going to realise that in actual fact we can't afford not to have local authorities putting people in houses and so on, and it's a false economy to think of it in any other way.
Okay, one thing that you can definitely see if you look around the place, if you open your eyes and see how things are changing, is how many shops seem to be empty at the moment, even in places like the galleries, empty shops. A charity shop for the first time appearing in the galleries last year. People just don't seem to have the spending power, Gary, do they?
Spending power over the last couple of years has suffered significantly.
You don't even see people going out much in the evenings, apart from a Friday night and a Saturday night. The city centre here in Bristol seems to have slowly died.
Well, people are still spending quite a lot, but the retail sector has been badly squeezed, partly because spending power has reduced, and also because of Brexit, because... We've got a huge problem caused by Brexit, because suppliers are having to pay more to get the basic goods in, and there's no more money from people here to pay for them.
Well, there's been a cut in real wages, effectively.
Absolutely.
Because of the pound's devaluation. Another factor, which is a more micro factor, is that people are shopping online now.
Yes.
And that's gradually killing off mainstream retail anyway.
Brexit hasn't happened yet, Gary.
The fall in the pound has, Tony. We lost a 20% value of the pound. That means everybody's 20% worse off.
True. Donald, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I agree. I agree entirely with Martin there. I almost agree with Gary. People haven't got the money to spend, but part of the reason is because of the Tory government, basically, has kept that money in the pockets of rich people. And it is poor people who keep the money circulating because they simply have to. So that money has stayed in people's bank accounts. It's been invested in property, inflated property prices, or it's gone abroad to the Virgin Islands or Turks and Caicos or something. We need to get it into the hands of poor people with, you know, this people's QE, so that it starts to circulate and so the economy gets going again. You know, you come out to the suburbs, so out in Shirehampton stuff, you see the high streets there really looking quite down in the mouth. Part of that is internet shopping, but part of it is people don't have the money in their pockets to spend. You go to Gloucester Road, for instance, and you see good shops, and that's partly because there's wealthy people along Gloucester Road. You could have good shops in Shirehampton if there was the money.
The other side of this, of course, is people are shopping, but they're doing it on credit. So people are more and more in credit, in debt, basically. And that, of course, cannot ultimately be sustained if there's a rise in interest rates, which may happen because of a run on the pound, because of Brexit turning into a car crash, which it effectively is. Well, and at a certain point, there'll be, you know, somebody like Soros will take push the pound down, interest rates will have to rise, property market collapses, and then, of course, Labour will have to pick up the pieces.
Well, certainly the economy is in a perilous state at the moment. The threat of Brexit has already had a significant negative effect. If the government carry on the way that they look like they're going to carry on, then we could have an absolute car crash, and the economy could be in complete meltdown.
There's an announcement this week that the Metro bus, the part of it that we thought was going to South Bristol, and I saw Karen Smith, MP down there, Labour MP, on Points West last night, saying that she was rather annoyed that because people in South Bristol don't have so much money, First Group and the various other people who might have bid for that contract have decided they don't want to do it. So
it's an absolute disgrace. Not only is there's a hidden cut as well, not only is the Ashton to Hengrove route not happening, at least for the moment, but also the route from the city centre down to Hengrove, the frequency has been worse than halved, which means that it isn't the service that was actually promised to people some years ago. Now, part of the fault for all of this actually lays with the previous mayor. When he took over the Metro bus, it was on schedule and it was on budget to open in 2015, and he messed the whole thing up, overspent, so there was not enough money to actually make the thing work as well as it should have done. And I'm afraid he bears a lot of the blame for this. I can't say that the present one has actually, you know, done brilliantly well, but the previous mayor was culpable for a lot of the problems with the Metro bus.
Also, there's been another, which is, I mean, amazing. We're always talking about the lack of money that seems to be available for the city council here. But there seems to be plenty of money available to pay these senior executives over £150,000 each now, Donald. We've been told four senior executives, we're not going to have a chief executive, but four of them are going to be paid in total something like £600,000 a year.
Mm. In fact, senior executive salaries have gone down over the last few years in Bristol City Council. You have to compare them to all other public sector bodies, local authorities, NHS, police. You compare them and you find there is a market where if you don't pay someone what, yeah, I consider to be an extremely high salary, they'll simply go somewhere else. And that's the unfortunate thing.
Is there any justification for these salaries, Gary? I mean, it does seem like quite a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. Part of the reason that the salaries are going up now, the total bill that's being paid out for senior management is a little lower because officers are being asked to do more and more, covering wider and wider areas, and that's having an effect. But part of the reason is that officers do not want to come and work for Bristol at the moment. And we had that problem some years ago with teachers. The Education Authority had such a lousy image that nobody wanted Bristol on their CV, and it took quite a number of years for that to be changed around. We're having to pay, and I had this from a professional in HR in the council, we're having to pay roughly 15% more because of the negative image that Bristol administration has actually
that's
got.
That's partly your fault. I mean, you were running the city, the Lib Dems were.
It wasn't a problem then. It is now, though. I
sat on an interview panel a few days ago, Tony, for a senior management post, and we had 29 applicants. We just recruited as our head of paid service the chief executive of North Somerset, who's absolutely delighted to come here. So I think Gary's just talking absolute nonsense.
Well, the chap thinks he's going to be chief executive, but the mayor doesn't think so. So, you know, we'll see what actually
point,
happens.
Isn't it? Your point is wrong, Gary.
Two very different views on how the council operate.
One wrong and one right, Gary.
One of the points that was made last week here was that Marvin has brought in so many new people, both as senior council officers and as his cabinet, that he's out of touch, actually, that there's been no continuity. And that's one of the reasons that people are in these senior positions. A lot of them don't really know what they're doing because there hasn't been any proper handover.
Well, there's certainly a lot of new people and they're going to take time to bed in, but we needed a lot of new people.
Yeah, and basically there's been a huge turnover of staff and we had a disastrous period with a chief executive brought in by Marvin for a seven-month period and then given a bung when she actually left. It was quite disgraceful and is absolutely shocking, and that's going to be looked into.
Is it legal? To just give someone a bung? I thought that was the sort of thing that the mob did.
Well, your word's not mine. But basically, that person was not entitled...
I think bung was your word, actually, Gary. But
I think they were not required to have that money paid to them. But basically, it was an embarrassment because the mayor had brought this person in, put them in post, and then there was a major failure. We had a huge, huge turnover of senior staff because the atmosphere was so poisonous.
What do you say to that?
I think we have got some excellent new senior staff coming in. We've had loads of applicants. Certainly there was a poisonous atmosphere from the days of the previous mayor and the Lib Dem administration before that, but we're totally turning it around now. And as I say, we had 29 applicants for the job that I was interviewing for the other day, and really, really top quality ones.
Well, Claire Campion-Smith was ousted from the cabinet because they decided just to have a Labour cabinet. He's quite within his rights to do that, our marvellous Marvin the Mayor. But what she was saying was that he was, what she felt was using this kind of US business style introduction of US business style politics into the city, which she didn't like. What would you say to that? I mean, American style, is that the way we should be running? I mean, actually, the whole idea of having a mayor is a US idea, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, that's the only indication of any American style I've seen is having a mayor. And obviously that's something we've had to pick up because that's the reality of the situation. I don't see anything else particularly American.
It's the business style, I think, that was the thing that worried me, is because surely running a city is not like running a business. I mean, you're caring for hundreds of thousands of people. It's not a business, is it? It shouldn't be.
Well, it is in the sense that you have got a lot of assets and you're a fool if you don't use them properly. You know, we own 40% of the land in the city. Now, if we didn't take that fact seriously and make sure that we're using that properly and we're generating the income to give services, if you call that business, I make no apology for it.
The mayor system has been an absolute disaster for Bristol, not just with this one, but with the previous one as well. The problem with the mayor system, you get bad decisions because everyone's running to please one man rather than looking at the situation properly. You get vanity projects.
Well, can I just say we don't do that on this show. In fact, it was a headline from one of our programs last year that caused the mayor to ban me on Twitter. So I can't even see what he's saying nowadays.
Basically, we need to get rid of the mayor system. From Bristol, it's been extremely damaging for us. It's wasted huge amounts of money. It's caused all sorts of bad decisions. And whichever party had been in charge previously, we never had such a mess as we had with the previous mayor and with this one.
Marvin did say, as he was coming to power, Donald, that he wanted transparent politics in Bristol. He certainly, as regards this programme, he's not interested in any kind of transparency. But, I mean, do you think he takes that seriously? I mean, he won't reply to our emails or anything. Basically, we've been blacklisted.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's cabinet meetings you can go to. I was at the scrutiny committee yesterday with mayoral question time. We don't get enormous attendance in the public gallery, but it's certainly transparent as far as I can see.
I'm sorry, but information does not come out to councillors. We're constantly having to put in freedom of information requests.
Don't you go to these scrutiny?
Not often.
Things, Gary, where you can directly ask Marvin questions face to face.
And I put in a couple of questions yesterday. I couldn't be around to hear the answers, but I've got the written answers, and basically they're concerned about the waste services. But you know, that's an aside. The information does not come through in the way that it used to. Whichever party was in charge before, Don doesn't have the experience to know what actually happened previously. When whichever party was actually in charge, there was a reasonable flow of information to the opposition parties, and therefore onto the public.
Picking up on Claire Campion-Smith's point from last week, I did have a little bit of a dig around the Harvard website, because, of course, Marvin went over to Harvard as a teenager or in his 20s, early 20s, to do this leadership course. One of the things they say as part of this course is, as a leader, the world expects you to compete strategically and win globally, no matter what the odds. I mean, this hard-nosed approach, it might actually be for making change, but does it sit well with running a city rather than running a business?
I don't think that Marvin adopts the approach from the website that you looked at. That's the honest truth.
Well, interesting when it comes to the arena, as an example. You know, we had the Greens, ourselves, and the majority of the Labour Party saying that they wanted the arena to proceed at Temple Meads, and the mayor saying it's not. And, you know, I mean, even within his own party, that is now, you know, he's having to go one way, and the rest of the party going in a different direction.
Both Harvard and Yale run these World Fellows programs in parallel, really, in a similar way to the US, young US people are brought over to Oxford to become Rhodes Scholars at an early age. The idea is they're sort of tapped up, you know, as teenagers and 20-year-olds to say, you're going to be a leader of tomorrow. And on that World Fellowship program at Yale, this chap called Maurice Greenberg is the guy that runs it and sponsors it. He's a criminal who used to run, he was chairman of American Insurance Group, who had to go through all sorts of hoops not to actually go to jail. He's the guy that funds that. And one of the fellows is a chap called Alexei Navalny. He was one of the people involved in organising the coup in Ukraine a few years ago. So you do wonder, you know, exactly what is meant by these leadership programs. Gary, what do you think they're all about? And is it a good idea to say to somebody when they're, whatever, 19 years old, tap them on the shoulder and say, you're going to be a leader for tomorrow?
Well, all I can say is that, I mean, not just opposition parties, but sizable numbers within the Labour Party are now totally cheesed off with the way this city is actually being run and the style that's being adopted by the mayor.
So why? Come on, let's be specific. Style? I mean, what is way he dresses or what? What are you talking about?
No, it's basically saying, I'm right. I know. I understand. I'm afraid you lot just don't understand what it's about.
Well, maybe he is right.
I don't think so. Basically, you've got to look at what was going before, when we didn't have a mayor system, and what's happening now. And the previous mayor was exactly the same. He had a different party hat on, but his attitude is exactly the same. People got fed up with him after a few years.
But if you want to try and run anything by committee, it always takes forever to come to any decision. And what you get is you get people talking on and on and on, and eventually there's no decision really made. It's always some kind of compromise.
I absolutely not. I mean, very often compromise is the right way forward, by the way, rather than one triumphing over another. You just got to look at Northern Ireland to see that a bit of compromise sometimes helps a bit, you know. But basically, if you look at the west of England, the four authorities came together, mixed committee, people with different political persuasions, and actually produced results, got large amounts of money out of government. It's only after we got a mayor that things started going wrong with the big projects in this city.
But hasn't Marvin been sort of sidelined by the Metro Mayor, who's kind of almost coming over his head?
Well, it's interesting. See, Marvin apparently doesn't seem to have any influence over you know, the Metro bus going to Hengrove, underprivileged areas in South Bristol, and basically the Labour MP down there. I agree with her entirely. She's saying exactly the right thing, and all the councillors in South Bristol are absolutely cheesed off with the present administration, a lot of them Labour.
Donald, what do you make of this difference between having a single strategic leader for the city and doing things by committee?
I think any system has its weaknesses, but the people of Bristol voted for a mayoral system partly as a response to the fact they were pig sick of the Lib Dems running it and the absolute mess it was in, and they just saw it as disorderly. So in the end they felt they wanted a single leader, and I think there's disadvantages to both ways of doing it.
I think there was no real, I mean, if you think about what the turnout was at that local election, which we elected a mayor, it was, you know, it was about 14% of the electorate. I think underlying all of this is it was basically a Tory idea to have mayors. They were the ones who thought that it would be a great idea. And, of course, they did it at the same time as with denuding local authorities of all of their traditional powers. So we go through this whole rigmarole of, are we going to have a mayor? Yes, we are. Who's it going to be? And it all becomes a personality contest. And then when we get to the end of the line, in actual fact, they've got to do what central government says, which is close libraries and toilets. And that's all we're talking about.
And we were promised in that referendum that there'd be all extra powers that came with having a mayor, which, of course, were all lies.
Yeah.
They haven't turned out
that's
at
right.
all. There's this been
so, in other words, you've got a big disjunction there between the kind of, you know, the focus on an individual, which obviously does have a higher profile than a committee,
but
at the same time,
though,
they've got no power to really do what they need to do.
The really good news is that following work from the Lib Dems, supported by the other parties afterwards, is that you will have the power to get rid of the mayor system. We got that through Parliament, so basically the power that was not there for Bristol citizens will be there, and it is there, and they will be able to get rid of the mayor.
Yeah, but only at 2020, when there's nothing left of the council.
Well, it's not in good shape at the moment, I've got to admit.
I mean, is it right, Gary, that by 2020 it's pretty much only adult social care the council will be running?
I'm not in charge. I don't know what the secret plans are.
Well, that financial trajectory is one that was set by the Lib Dems and the Tories. And, you know, you can have what system you like. Power lies with money. And the money lies with central government. And they're holding on to it. And they have been since the days of the Lib Dems
actually,
and the Tories.
I did mention Navalny. I mentioned Navalny and Ukraine.
Thatcher, but they
and actually, this was one of the things that brought people out onto the streets of Ukraine. Because they were saying, well, we're paying all our taxes in, but none of this is coming out to the regions anymore. And that seems to be the way, Gary, we're going in Britain.
Yeah, Britain's always been far too centralised. And we need to have... successive Tory and Labour governments have refused to devolve real power. Refused to devolve real power.
Yes.
And basically, we want power devolved to cities and regions. And if this region would, in actual fact, be in far better shape if we had more control over our own destiny.
Yes.
There's a problem with finance, of course, because, you know, wealthier areas will have more resources than poorer areas, and eventually you might need a central system that's fair.
I mean, this does seem to be something which is being imposed right across, it's not just Britain, it's right across Europe. I mean, look at Spain, for example, where the Catalonian parliament has effectively been abolished, that they're, when they decide something, it's just ignored, and the people who make those decisions are arrested. I mean, is there something, a wider financial type conspiracy going on here, with parties saying actually we want to draw all power to ourselves, almost like a kind of tiny elite of people?
I think the problem is power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts.
Well, in which case it's corrupted the Lib Dems as well, because you had power, didn't you?
We had the
students down the river.
We had influence. In actual fact, more students now from underprivileged backgrounds go to university than used to happen before, and it's actually rather more successful than the Scottish model. But what we actually did, we put in the pupil premium, which has been a massive boost to children at school, provides more funding for the people who need
so
it.
So it's
more.
Good for young people to come out of university with all that debt, 50,000.
No, I don't agree with that. And in actual fact, we actually looked to change some of the things that we didn't have a majority in Parliament.
I mean, the one thing it seems to me is happening as a result of this student debt is that all these student flats are being built all around the city. We've got one just around the corner from us in Portland Square, another load of flats everywhere.
The Lib Dems, have to face it, they propped up that Tory government. It wouldn't have been in power if it wasn't for them. They did the country no favours, and they stopped.
What actually happened when the Labour Party lost the election before, nobody won that election. And what we actually had was the Labour Party, a gibbering mess in the corner, with failing to take responsibility and actually failing to have discussions. We tried to have discussions with the Labour Party at that time, in 2010, and the majority of the Labour Party threw it back. So we, in the interest of the country, we had to negotiate.
Well, it wasn't, but it wasn't,
Martin, don't we have a similar situation today, actually, with the DUP taking that role? One of the things that worries me is that there's all these discussions going on. Apparently now Theresa May wants to make decisions about whether to attack Syria or not in cabinet. She doesn't want to recall Parliament. And you know what? I get a little bit suspicious, because exactly the same thing happened last year with Donald Trump's strike on Syria. All of these decisions were being made whilst Parliament was in recess over Easter. In fact, it's almost exactly a year, Martin, isn't it, to the day when Trump struck Syria?
Yes.
And if the same thing happened on Saturday with this chemical weapons, so-called chemical weapons attack, and this was discussed, quite rightly so, on BBC Question Time last night. And I thought I'd just see if there was any sense coming out of the audience, because there never seems to be very much on the panel on Question Time. So here's a little clip from last night's BBC Question Time.
I think in this country we pride ourselves on our law and legal system, which presumes innocent until proven guilty. Before investigators had even got on the ground in Syria, you were already saying it was Assad. We were lied to about the weapons of mass destruction, about Saddam Hussein, and we're not going to fall for it again. The people of this country are too wise to this now. Over 1.3 million people died as a result of the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. We need to think carefully about this before we take action.
Okay. Barry Gardner.
So the key thing for me, Donald, there was we're not going to fall for it again. I mean, is it possible that this is another kind of con trick, a bit like weapons of mass destruction in Iraq?
No, I don't think so. Damascus is a city I know very well, and I don't see that there's any possibility that the Assad government weren't responsible for this. But, you know, our history of military interventions, Iraq, Afghanistan, they just haven't been very successful, have they? So I'm waiting to see what the Conservative government are going to offer in terms of an intervention. I really think that force is not going to work.
Well, I'll tell you what the evidence might be, and that is that there are some pretty crazy Islamist terrorists in there. They may possibly have used chemical weapons, and also there doesn't really seem to be any point whatsoever, as he's about to win the civil war in the whole around the Damascus area and get rid of the final bunch of terrorists, for Assad. There's no motive to use chemical weapons, surely.
We await the results of the investigation by the United Nations, don't we? But
that's good, because it's actually quite important, isn't it, to have the investigation before
we
start bombing.
I agree. Anyway, I don't want to start bombing at all. I don't want to start bombing at all, Tony.
This is quite a big week. This is quite a big week, because we've heard that the Russians actually threatening to sink US ships, shoot down British planes.
Well, for starters, can we deal with that point about the investigation? Because a UN investigation would be a bonus, I agree. But the Labour Party are hanging everything on that, when we know that there's been a Russian veto on that on the last six occasions. So it ain't going to happen. And I think that people ought to think back to Iraq, what happened there. The damage, the destruction, thousands of people killed. This country was done huge damage in terms of its image, and the Labour Party did that. The Labour Party took us into Iraq. They made the mess of all that. And the only party who stood against it was the Liberal Democrats. And I'm afraid to say, we were right.
Martin, Martin will have a chance to talk about this in the second hour, because we're talking about this quite a lot more. Going back down to earth a little bit, we've had news this week about universal credit from The Guardian. Universal credit flaws mean that thousands will be worse off. Analysis shows that self-employed workers could receive less over a year than employees in traditional jobs who earn the same amount. So thousands of self-employed agency and zero-hour contract workers will be potentially hundreds of pounds a year worse off under universal credit, according to research, Martin.
Yeah, it's universal credit has been completely mishandled.
And this is the Citizens Advice Bureau.
So. Yeah, I mean, they basically... What they should do, the whole concept of universal credit is you give people a basic standard of living and then they earn on top of that. The problem with it, and I'm still in receipt of universal credit although I'm in work, is because you then take money away from people if they earn. So in other words, I've just got to the sweet spot now where if I work any more, I'll be worse off, and if I work any less, I'll be worse off. But I'm not working full time because it doesn't make sense for me to work full time.
What do you have to do? Sort of try it month by month.
Well, you do. I'll work
this amount of days and see how much money I get.
You suck it and see. Now, the problem is with people on who are self-employed is they've got to reach a certain minimum level of income, and it's presumed that they will reach full-time minimum wage level. Now, in actual fact, lots of self-employed people won't be able to do that because it isn't actually the route to prosperity. It's often just a stopgap measure after people have been made redundant or whatever, and therefore they're going to lose a lot of money. And of course, the other fundamental problem with universal credit is landlords are not being paid directly as they used to be with housing benefit, and they won't rent to people on universal credit, which is why the housing problem is getting worse and worse, and registered homelessness is increasing dramatically.
Gary, Citizens Advice says that a self-employed worker earning around about £10,000 a year will be about £700 worse off under universal credit than an employee with an identical annual income but paid a regular monthly salary. Doesn't sound fair at all.
The irony is that the first concept of universal credit was accepted by all parties, and as a concept, it was fine. The trouble is, along the last 2 or 3 years, bits have been chipped away out of it so that it doesn't actually work in the way that it was.
But it's not just that. Loads of people are being persuaded to become self-employed, aren't they? Then less people have got secure jobs. Donald, this just sounds absolutely appalling. Why is it that it seems that it's just another trick to rob people, effectively, by our wonderful government?
Yes. As Gary said, the concept has probably got some merit to it, as has the concept of a universal basic income. But the point is, if you're not going to fund it properly, it's always going to be bad, isn't it? At the end of the day, you've got to somehow transfer money from people who've got far too much and haven't really earned it. It's just come to them because the tax system is wrong. And you've got to transfer that to the people who've worked really hard but aren't paid what they deserve.
And they're talking
you've got
about
to face that, and Lib Dems have never faced that, and Labour now under our leadership now is prepared to face that basic issue.
Labour Party have never faced up to reality at all on anything, and basically during the last administration, during the last government, it wasn't perfect by any means because we weren't in control of it. In actual fact, the tax rates and the net position for higher earners was more hit than those on the lowest level. And that's factual. And basically, the tax take on the higher earners did go up.
Well, in the 1950s, when Labour was in charge at the first bit, at the end of the Second World War, the top rate of tax in this country, as in the United States of America, was 96%. And, of course, that made it possible to do all sorts of things it's not possible to do now.
Well, lots of Brits went off to America, didn't they?
Well, the Rolling Stones famously fled to France, didn't they?
Elton John? No, he wasn't alive then, was he?
Well, I think the way you deal with that is you say if you leave the country and you pay your taxes as a British citizen wherever you live, and if you leave the country and say, well, I don't live in Britain anymore, you say, right, well, you lose your right of residence and your kids can't go
to
eating.
Exchange controls, stopping people taking money out of the
country. Until 1979, you couldn't take more than £1,000 out of this country without a permission from the government.
I mean, isn't that basically
Tory or Labour?
Martin, isn't that surely what we should be doing with Brexit, is basically saying to people, if you've got money and you can't take it abroad?
Well, what I would say,
and to people like Jacob Rees-Mogg, that you can't keep slush funds tax havens?
What I would say to those who are in favour of Brexit is this. When I was interviewed to go to Oxford University in 1977, one of the questions I was asked, what do you understand defined by the term seed economy. And this was, of course, before the exchange controls were lifted. And, of course, what Brexit could lead to is a Cuban Britain run by Corbyn, in which the taxes on the wealthy will be absolutely horrendous. And again, the right wing of the Tory party better face up to this, because if Brexit is a mess and turns into a disaster, they're going to be facing us behind the bike sheds with no protection.
Well, they'll probably be getting on the first plane out of here, actually.
Well, we might stop them.
I'm not sure that you can.
Well, we can stop them coming back, Tony.
Do that. Look,
let's get back down. You're on Team Britain or you're out.
It's like a wasteland. Bristol people react with horror as the council clears wood at Stoke Park Estate. This is on Purdown. For cattle, restoration works to Stoke Park Estate has started and visitors to the park are concerned. Well, a lot of this is scrubland and woodland, Gary. It's all been cut down for, apparently, for grazing. And the locals say they haven't been consulted, although I was chatting to Donald earlier. Apparently, they have been consulted.
Well, on the concept of there being grazing on there, they were consulted over a number of years, and it was actually an ambition to put some grazing back on there. I haven't seen the detail, so I haven't seen how it's actually been carried out, but I do know from having spoken to people there over the last two or three years that, you know, when we actually acquired that for the city, because that's one thing we did as administration, we took Stoke Park from developers and put it into the ownership and control of the city council. And there was a dowry which went with it that should have allowed for quite a lot of improvements, but unfortunately, they don't seem to have happened.
Donald?
Well, the information on the consultation and the reports from the scientists and historians and everything else is on the Bristol City Council website, and the improvements are going to happen. There's lots of diagrams, and one or two people are struggling with the idea of change, but the fact is it's a great historic parkland, and you know, some of the flora and fauna that were part of it do require a certain amount of management in order for them to flourish.
Up there the other day, the blackbirds and the crows were all looking, well, I mean, maybe not quite so much the crows, the blackbirds and the robins were looking a little bit distressed. All their nesting areas have gone.
Oh, they won't be cutting down nesting areas in, City Council.
Well, they
definitely
have.
Does.
I mean, they have.
In the winter, but when they weren't nesting. But, your insight into crow psychology may be a bit limited, Tony.
Okay. Finally, Labour-run Bristol City Council bans Jeremy Corbyn bags from a council meeting. Now, what on earth is going on? You first, Donald. I think you're the one that should answer this. If you've got a Jeremy Corbyn bag, you're not allowed in to the council.
I haven't got... I haven't personally, no. Julie and Oliver, I think they may... Perhaps the security guards thought that they were going to wave them as banners. I think that may be the reason.
I'm afraid... I'm not a fan of Jeremy Corbyn bags, which you might understand. But I think that the clampdown on the public in the city council meetings has actually gone rather too far.
But what's the argument for this?
Tony, there was a flare.
It's a banner.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. They didn't stop the flare.
A bag is a banner. If you hold your bag up, I mean, I could hold up a Tesco bag, couldn't
I? The Lord Mayor administers full council meetings, and she has been concerned about some banners in there. There is a real security problem. Obviously, if someone could bring a flare in, they could bring in something else more dangerous
I mean, that's not a bag, is it? A flare is not
a bag. I personally wouldn't ban a Jeremy Corbyn bag. I'd be very happy to have one, but I haven't.
What sort of bag would you ban?
I can't imagine myself banning a bag, actually. But as I say, the Lord Mayor is the one who bans bags.
Well, I mean, there's been some actually legitimate protests, which has been, you know, cut back. People protesting about the library closures, the toilet closures and all that sort of thing. And quite frankly, I think the public gallery is there so that people can make a bit of a noise and put up banners, whatever. And I'm absolutely in favour of that. I'm not in favour of flares.
Should the council provide them with megaphones? Don't answer that. Time now for the Murdoch News at 7. Thanks to our guests, Labour Councillor Ravenmouth, Lawrence Weston, Donald Alexander and Lib Dem leader, Councillor for Knoll, Gary Hopkins. After the news, we'll be talking Syria.
On 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.